This is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers. Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid as an offensive weapon, when if you're the Steelers, he's come across as a bit of a weapon himself in different ways.
And Adam Nathan.
It's tricky because Hugh Jackson said nothing for me to shove him in.
We are going to follow you. Gotcha, you lead us, gotcha, okay? Let's go do it. I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Go Hawks!
Welcome to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the only and official UK Seahawkers podcast. Myself, Stuart Court, is as ever joined by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm good. I was hoping that you might come back with a bit of an American drawl to take the edge off that accent of yours, but no dice, unfortunately. What a shame.
That's not very fair. I was having a drink. No, sorry, no bueno. I just got back from Arizona, Scottsdale, Old Town. If you ever get the chance to go to the Arizona Cardinals road game, I highly recommend it. Salt was just a complete wash with Seahawks green and blue on Saturday night, and obviously then Sunday morning, the look on the staff when they rolled up to the door and there was a queue 40, 50 people strong waiting to get in. There was a guard of honor walking into the bar last night when they opened up. It was pretty cool. And obviously it was pretty cool as well to meet former Seahawk and Super Bowl champ with the New England Patriots safety lawyer Malloy, who also is making the trip over to London in his words, just a party, boy. So this week we will look back on the Arizona Cardinals game before looking ahead to what is the collective running into the local buzzsaw this week back in Seattle against the Rams. But yeah, the Seahawks did go down to the desert on Sunday and against rookie quarterback making his first start and just about edged it, coming out victorious 20-17. Here is how it sounded on the TV broadcast.
Second down and 5 from the 20-yard line, and Mike Davis will get the first down, and here's Russell Wilson blocking and diving into the end zone.
Oh, and I love this right here. Look at Russell Wilson. Watch him go hunt this up right here. Look at that. Just, I mean, Antoine Bethea, you're never going to hear the end of that in meetings as he gets low and drives the tackler out of the back of the end zone as Mike Davis leaps over the end line.
Only one wide receiver out there, and here's David Johnson trying to juke his way for yardage, and he picks up 3 and a flag is down. Ball is jarred loose, picked up by Seattle. Here's the fumble.
That's Flowers. That's Trey Flowers ripping the ball out. They have a competition in practice. Trey Flowers rips it out. McDougal right there. Johnny on the spot to pick it up.
Second and goal, they go to Davis. Fluker, just as you called it, and a touchdown for Seattle. Here it is. And this kick is going to be good, and the Seahawks win it. They mob Janikowski.
Yeah, the Seahawks survived. Just Sebastian Janikowski went from a villain to hero, zero to hero over the course of Sunday. It was a lot closer than we expected on Sunday, wasn't it?
Yeah, and in a way we were almost lucky that it was close. I mean, I know Seabass missed 2 field goals that you'd think he would normally make, but I was just thinking about what, you know, my number one takeaway would be from the game, you know, when we're in the hour or so before podcast. And in terms of how many plays got away from each team that you think, oh, you know, we should have made that play, assume that everyone made the plays they could have made, Arizona probably win it, because Rosen was unlucky that he got let down by 3 or 4 bad drops that certainly would have added a lot of points on the board for the Cardinals, and we sort of got away with it against a team that we thought were going to be poor.
Yeah, well, there was two drops within the 15-yard line, didn't they, by Nelson and Chad Williams, the first one, when Earl Thomas just got completely lost, that was a bad. I mean, if he had probably had a chance to get up and walk it in as well. But yeah, so Josh Rosen was let down slightly. But the Seahawks, offensively, it's a very, very strange day where Russell Wilson only it goes 19 for 26, and the Seahawks have a 100-yard rusher for the second consecutive week. But it wasn't much fun, if anything at all, to watch, was it, on the offensive side of the ball?
Well, I mean, look, you were there. I was going to ask you, I was going to use fun as the exact term. What did you make of it being in the stands? I mean, because at home, I just found it completely maddening, I have to say.
Well, I think I said to you, it's the fifth time I've seen Seahawks, but lucky enough to be a Seahawks game in the last 5 years, and it's the most annoyed and pissed off I've been during a game. Late third, early fourth quarter, when Russell Wilson actually kept the read option for the first time since the moon landing, I literally stood up and went, censor myself, about time. Because it was there, it's been there the whole season. It's been there for him. I know he got like 10, 12 yards on it. But it's just something different instead of just the read option handoff to the running back for fourth. It was just so. And the third downs, I mean, I think I text you during the game. There was two occasions where Dwayne Brown was completely losing his collective shit after a play breakdown, especially after Russell Wilson was sacked on the fourth and one. Because it was just nonsensical. The play calling was just bizarre. The usage of the running backs was just weird, just even weirder, even stranger. Because when I saw that Chris Carson was in his hoodie and it was inactive, first thing I did, went on and picked up Rashad Penny to play for the fantasy team. And then obviously that kind of got kiboshed when Mike Davis is churning yards up for fun. It just made no sense at all how they were using the running backs and how they were calling the game, which it kind of played into their hands. Because as also we saw as well, Adam, it was everything was in front of their defense, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think I've worked out who Schottenheimer is, if I'm going to do an English soccer personification for him. And I regret to say, it's as bad as it possibly can get. It's Andre it's Andre Villas-Boas. It is a heavily stylized guy who is completely, infuriatingly obsessed with one way of playing that sucks the life out of anyone on the team watching it. All the other fans look at you and laugh, and you've got this guy, this young, brash-ish guy who reckons that, you know, this is the way to do it, and he's got all his stats and his 53 nonsense. And I've ended up with Arsene Wenger as the head coach and AVB as the offensive coordinator, and really it can't actually get any worse than that for me.
Well, saying 53 nonsense, did you realise how many plays they had?
It was 53 exactly, wasn't it?
Yeah, 19 completions and 34 rushes as well. Yeah, it's not. It's just not great. I know we've. It's only 4 weeks in. The stand at 500 and all that stuff, but I mean, we're going to see it this week. I mean, you could not get a more chalk and cheese matchup in the NFL as what we're going to see on Sunday night. You've got the boy genius head coach for the LA Rams, and then you've got, I mean, he's turning Jared Goff into a serviceable quarterback, which is no mean feat from where we looked early on. But it's just,
reckon Pete Carroll and Schottenheimer think when they watch the Rams play offense?
They don't. I don't know. They just said, I mean, Pete Carroll said, I think Brock Assault, that they're just balling. They're not. Yeah, they're getting yards, they're getting points and stuff, but it's how they're doing it. I mean, three, maybe four, the Rams touchdowns last Thursday night was picking on an Anthony Barr, who's seen as one of the top linebackers in the league. And they clearly saw something on film and picked on him relentlessly. But we don't seem to do that. We just seem to go, oh, we're going to do this every time, every snap, and we're just going to ask you to stop us. And most of the time, teams are.
Wilson had one pass over 15 yards. Not completion, yep. Pass. That's yep. Insane.
And we had three third downs where the completion was a yard or 2 yards short of the yard to gain marker. And there was, I think, Samuel Gold or Nathan Ertz on Twitter but pointing out where on those plays, no one ran past the first down
marker. You'll be pleased to see that Brian Schottenheimer in his press conference said he teased Russell Wilson and Doug Baldwin about coming up half a yard short of the sticks, and we have to be better, was his quote.
Yeah, but he didn't send anyone past the yard marker. Doug Baldwin, yeah, maybe he probably should, but yeah. It was all curls and outs, and everything was in front of the Cardinals' secondary, which is probably why Trey Boston ended up with like 14 tackles or whatever he ended up with, because everything was in front of him, right in front of him, while Josh Rosen, rookie in his first game,
he was slinging it,
stood in the pocket and launched it downfield time after time. I think Russell Wilson, I think the only time he threw it anywhere near aggressively in the air, he overthrew Brandon Marshall by about 16 rows in the back of the end zone. I think it's Brandon Marshall. It was just.
I mean, the receivers don't help, do they? Because they're generally, I mean, ironically, we finally have a pedestrian receiver call.
Assuming
that Baldwin is not healthy, there's not a lot, which he isn't, because you said he was limping all through the warm-up, didn't you?
He was the last, when I say he's the last person off the field, I don't mean like, oh no, McDougal ran past him, he was the last person off the field in the warm-ups by about 90 seconds. He walked off that field so slowly with his left hand on his left thigh, grimacing all the way off. I was quite surprised he played. I don't think he'd come out for the start of the first couple of drives in the third quarter. He ended with 5 catches for 41 yards, which isn't a bad day, but when the leading receiver only gets 12 more yards than that, it's not great, is it?
No. And then you take him out, and Marshall is now looking like a guy who may not even make the plane to London if this weekend doesn't go very well. And he's at the minute really your number two receiver, assuming that Baldwin's not fully healthy.
Especially with the injury to Will Disley as well. But running game, as we did say, Mark Davis was the starting guy. What Pete Carroll said, they just thought he... But I think basically they just trusted him more at this juncture of the season. 21 rushes for 101 yards and 2 touchdowns, the first one of which was helped by a pretty cool, at the same time, worrying block from number 3, Russell Wilson. But we'll get onto Penny in a sec. But Mike Davis has gone from being inactive in week 1 to tweeting out his frustration to telling a friend of the show, Michael Sean Dugar, that it's all logged away from everything he's gone through. I mean, I think Mike Dugar said when he's on the podcast that he's still bitter from how it ended in San Francisco for Davis. But the Seahawks reaped the benefits of that on Sunday, didn't they?
Yeah, I think there's been a bit of a revisionism about Davis over the offseason, because he went into the season, I think, being sort of the butt of a few jokes as a running back. But I thought last year he did as well as could be expected for a team who were running so disgracefully for a season. You know, he certainly came in with the most juice of anyone. And, you know, it is a huge surprise to see him having so many more reps than Penny, especially as Penny actually ran quite well in the runs that he had. But the fact that Davis was very much the go-to guy, we can talk about the use of the first round pick another time, because, you know, now 20 past 12 is not that time, but maybe it will be, let's see. But I thought he ran really well, and, you know, the way that the Seahawks want to play is not what's going to get me off my seat, and I don't find it particularly exciting, but, you know, rushing and the way they rushed worked pretty well at the weekend.
It did. Mike Davis did a lot of his running without the aid of the O-line, because a lot of the runs were outside where the Patrick Peterson or whoever the guy on the other side is for the Cardinals had crashed in a bit, and he reaped the benefits. His 2 touchdown runs, you can't ask for anything more than that, and it's a big effort to get over the line. But Rashad Penny, 9 rushes for 49 yards. He had 2 runs. One run, which is a lot of people saying that's how he looked like at San Diego State, but this one in the third quarter where he just... I mean, it looked a lot... I've seen it back on the Game Pass. It looked a lot more impressive when he's standing there in the stadium. The cut
that on third and one?
To get, I think so. It was coming towards my end. Yeah. The cut live, it looked really impressive.
Like he ran behind the left TV. Guard, left tackle, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It didn't look as impressive on TV copy. But yeah, he, as you say, he did look brightest. But first round pick, not being trusted to carry the load a month into the season is what, Adam?
You try not to be too, you know, critical, so I'm going to say it's strange, and I'll leave it at that. Considering how high they were on him and using this pick, you know, to change the running game. You would have thought going into the year, you know, in the way that Saquon Barkley is straight in, that, you know, he would be used as the number one guy, and he's clearly not anywhere near that. So either something has gone wrong ability-wise, or there's been a, you know, a clash of personalities, which, you know, you'd think you'd have heard something about that, but maybe he's just not yet as good as they hoped, you know, which is fine in a way, but then it's frustrating when you see someone like Philip Lindsay, who's an undrafted free agent, who's got more yards than Saquon Barkley himself, at the Broncos just tearing it up, and you just wonder, you know, that, you know, who is it? Travis Kelce was picked with the pick after Christian Michael, for the sake of argument. And you just wonder in a couple of years' time if you're going to look back at some of these guys that are taken, you know, between the 30th and 40th pick in the draft and think, oh, that was two picks after Rashad Penny.
Well, Sony Michel went like three picks after, yeah, didn't he? And he had a 100-yard day on Sunday. Yeah, it is frustrating. But apart from with Russell Wilson, it has been par for the course with how they bring along their first-round picks. Obviously, well, the first picks, the early picks, because obviously Paul Richardson took 2 or 3 years. Golden Tate took a couple of years, the second-round pick. Obviously, Malik McDowell never had the chance to get going. Christian Michael, well, again, never got the chance. Ethan Postic, he took at least 10, 12 weeks to even get a look in last year. Now he's already back on the outside looking in. So yeah, it might just be how they do things, but with how much he was talked up between April and June,
yeah,
when they got back in camp, it is a bit, yeah, as you said,
and it's not a talent-laden roster, let's be honest, at this stage.
No,
you know, it's not Christian Michael having Marshawn Lynch ahead of him.
No, it's not. It's just all a bit weird. But obviously, that may all change on Sunday with the Rams coming into town. Russell Wilson, 19-26, 172 yards, sacked just twice. So I said on Facebook and got a bit of grief for it that, yet again, for me, the O-line were fine again on Sunday. And how the five line up, especially with Sweezy at left and Fluker at right guard, who is possibly the biggest human being I've ever stood within 20 yards of. He's so big. Everything is... Oh, it's just... Yeah. That might be... We might actually have a settled O-line going forward for a change.
Well, the view on Fluker was always that he was going to be very effective in the running game and not particularly good in the passing game. Now, we didn't really have enough opportunities in the passing game. We haven't really in the last two games to see what he's actually like in pass protection, because we've obviously run so much more than we've passed. And in a way, I guess the way they're trying to play is probably a fairly decent way to do it against crap teams. But this weekend is when you're really going to see what that offensive line is like, because you can imagine there's going to be times where Sue and Donald are going to have the opportunity just to utterly tee off.
Oh God!
What do you? I tweeted about Russell Wilson saying that I feel he's being neutered by the head coach and the offensive coordinator at a time in his career when you'd expect he's going to be taking the team over. And we always mock him a little bit personality wise, whatever. But I actually feel pretty sorry for him as a guy, because he should be now the main focal point of the offense, and he's almost been relegated to it to just a secondary part of it right now.
Yeah, he is. He should be at this point what I like Cam Newton's been in Carolina pretty much since he got there. He should be, everything on that offense should go through off the back of him, and the last 2 weeks in particular, it hasn't. I mean, Denver, you probably suggest it probably did a little bit more, because obviously they had to come back into the game. Chicago, it was a little bit more, because again, they were chasing the game. But the two games they've had leads in at certain points, like they did on Sunday and against the Cowboys, it's just been completely taken out of his hands. And like I said, when he kept that handoff and got, I don't know, 7-8 yards, it was the best play of the game, because that's what you should be doing, because just doing that, just putting that onto film against the Rams, against Wave, to get Wave that's watching that, is something. But they should have been doing that for 2 or 3 weeks before. That's what Russell Wilson's good at, getting him out wide. You see what the Chiefs are doing with the greatest quarterback that's ever lived, Patrick Mahomes. it's working for them. And like Andy Reid and this offense apparently comes from the same tree, comes from the same coaching tree, comes from the same, has the same roots in doing it. But there's a coach who's adapting to his quarterback, where Russell Wilson's coach is kind of going, no, doing it this way.
What's the end game here with this? What do you reckon Wilson and Carroll talk about when this comes up? Because there's no way Wilson hasn't noticed.
There's no way that Russell Wilson's fully content with what's going on. There just cannot be, especially when he's what. If the Seahawks don't make the playoffs, he's what 20 games from a contract extension, and this is the tape he's going to put on film. And someone, I think Jackson Bevins or someone said a couple of days ago on Twitter, if you switch these quarterbacks around on Sunday, Goff and Wilson, for the so Goff's with Carroll and Wilson's with McVay, Russell Wilson's already won MVP.
Yeah,
because. It's just scary to think of what someone like Sean McVay could do, which is how he just dials up a offensive game plan. But he's put his quarterback in position, because I haven't watched much of the Rams. I didn't see the game last Thursday, but I can't imagine that Goff is doing things like Brady does, where he just stands in the pocket, scans the whole field. From what I've seen, it looks like he's got one or two reads, and whichever one opens, just trust the guy to beat the defender, which, as I said last Thursday, was Anthony Barr more often than not. It's not. But instead, they just keep doing the same old, same old, same old. And yes, they're winning, but they've beat dross, really.
Yeah, I mean, this is the week where it all really will be crystallised one way or another, won't it? And, you know, if we win, we will have to eat some crow. We'll have to, because, you know, they'll be right and we'll be wrong. And there will be nothing that gives me more satisfaction than going into London week with a win against the Rams under my belt. But I have to say, I am going to put 50-14 as my prediction for this week to the Rams.
It's the first time since the New Orleans Saints playoff game on, when was that? The Beastquake game, 2010?
Yeah.
That the Seahawks have been this far, this much of an underdog at home. But yeah, our defensive side, they're back to Sunday against the Cardinals. Before we get on to probably one of the biggest talking points from the game, that secondary is look well in the makeup as it was at the start of the game on Sunday. The three survivors from Sunday, they're playing at a pretty high level, aren't they, on that side of the ball?
They are. Griffin has made a good step up in his second season, I think. He's not giving up, you know, the underneath that was fairly... You know, we didn't criticise him for it last year, but we did make mention of the fact that underneath was a pretty safe completion on Shaq Griffin. And he's obviously worked on his technique a lot, that is just not happening anymore, which is great to see. Mm-hmm. And fair play to Trey Flowers, who, you know, from a college safety to be converted into a starting right cornerback in the NFL. It's an incredible achievement from him. And obviously Bradley McDougal has probably been... team MVP so far this season?
He'd be in
your conversation, let's say.
Yeah, I'll probably go with that. But yeah, talking to Trey Flowers, the play he made on that fumble is incredible, because David Johnson lined him up from the get-go. The minute David Johnson had that ball in his hands, he was running straight over Trey Flowers, and Trey Flowers stood there, wrapped up, took the tackle, and on the way down, stripped the ball. It was a properly impressive play from, as you say, the guy who's playing his third game as a cornerback, which is, for as much as frustrating as Pete Carroll is on the offensive side of the ball, boy, can he coach defense.
Yeah, I mean, and especially secondary players, you know, training them up. He could probably take me and make me a half decent safety, to be honest.
Yeah, maybe that's pushing it.
Well, I don't know. I've probably got 4.9 speed, I reckon.
Elsewhere, defensive side, Frank Clark is just one of the more fun players to watch on this team. He is absolutely beasting, but the sack numbers aren't coming from the defensive line. With Jaron Reed, the only guy to get Josh Rosen down on Sunday, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, we always talk about Seahawks maybe getting a lack of sacks, and I guess the way they do it is contain, and they did contain pretty well. That said, and this is partly because Josh Rosen played better than I thought he would do in his first game, I thought Rosen had probably the edge on the defense overall and was just let down by a couple of drops. And we have to be very thankful for them, because that really did... If there's one thing that changed the game in our favor, it would be the drops.
Yeah, I'd agree. David Johnson was kept to 71 yards and 22 rushes. And although, again, it did look like a better day than that, didn't it?
It's funny that we say, like, held to 72 yards and 22 carries, whereas Chris Carson against Dallas had a much lower yards per carry than that, but was lauded because he reached the 100 yards. It's just quite an interesting, yeah. I only just thought of that, but it's quite an interesting little cross-section of how you can sort of read stats to make them go how you want them to go. I mean, yeah, you know, if you run enough times, you'll eventually reach 100 yards because you might be running for the next, you might be running for 4 days, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll eventually do a marathon, but it might take me 2 weeks to walk.
Yeah, that's very fair. If you're a Cardinals fan, there's a lot to be excited, maybe not, but encouraged by from what they saw from their high first round pick, though, isn't it? I mean, we keep going back to it, but he played quite well. He stood in that pocket and was flinging it all sides of the stadium.
I thought it was great. I'd be absolutely buzzing if that was my quarterback who did that as a rookie
in his first start.
I thought he was fantastic. It's bloody difficult. I cannot even imagine playing at home in your first game against a divisional rival, which, you know, has got a bit of needle, that rival. What were the fans like in terms of needle?
They were fine.
Fair enough.
It was a the side of the stadium behind the Seahawks bench was basically green.
Okay.
It was a good 55-45, 50-50 split. So it wasn't a full home game. But the Cardinals fans were fine. They were, they're not as vociferous as they are at the Central.
Okay. But I mean, yeah, he walked into that stadium. He made it his stadium on day one, which I was really impressed by, I have to say.
Yeah. Also, one other thing with that stadium is they did the player introductions and they did the offense, as I'm guessing they probably will do every home game this season. And the last person out was Larry Fitzgerald. And honestly, I that ovation was incredible. And someone, he's only got like four home games, five home games left. So that's probably going to happen every week.
Is he definitely retiring at the end of the season?
I think he will. Okay. I'd be surprised if he sticks around. But yeah, if it isn't, then he's going to do it for the next 2 years. But it is pretty cool to see. And when he made the catch on third down, there's a game break after it, and the whole stadium just jumped up and started chanting Larry for the entire game break. It was pretty cool to see how someone who does most deservingly so is appreciated like that. From his home, fans talking of appreciation. Adam, obviously, on the defensive side, the team did lose rookie tight end, who looked quite good, Will Disley, on what was a bit of a strange way, a bit of a strange injury, how it happened. I haven't really seen the game copy back. But that's a big blow on the defensive side. But on the defensive side, Earl Thomas broke the same bone on his leg again in the fourth quarter and signed off in possibly equally the most fitting way, but also obviously has upset quite a few people, Adam, with how he exited the field on Sunday.
Been thinking about this a lot, about whether I should be annoyed by the bird. What did I hear it called? Desert Digit, I think it was dubbed on Seahawk Radio by Softy.
Do you want to know if I'm upset?
Go on.
Or not? No, not at all. Carry on.
Okay. It's probably more fun if we disagree about things on the podcast, but I'm not going to do that for the sake of it because we're not Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith. And I have to say that we support a team who, the night before we won the Super Bowl, one of our wide receivers belted the other one in the face. We sort of support and follow a team that just has destruction and chaos that follows it all the way around. And I kind of feel that, you know, those stupid Twitter memes where if you don't like me at my worst, you don't deserve me at my best.
That's exactly what
I kind of feel that this is just par for the course with these guys. And, you know, we loved and lauded them on their way up. And they, you know, they've given us probably the happiest moments we can ever have as Seahawk fans. And I felt so sad for him, and I could fully understand it, that I didn't feel any disrespect to the team whatsoever with what he did. I just thought it was a moment of raw emotion, and it was just the same raw emotion that we've seen, you know, win our Super Bowls, just manifesting itself in a different way this time.
Yeah, like there is no one in this league, on this team, like there hasn't been anyone. I mean, like Earl Thomas, he's wired. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but he is wired completely differently. The focus he has. And he came out with a quote a few years ago that he backpedaled out of the womb. I mean, no one says things like that, but Earl Thomas did. And when he said stuff like that 2-3 years ago, he got that reaction you just had on him. He was laughed at and he was celebrated just because he wants to be... just because he wants to be paid, and now he's probably, well, he's definitely, I think if you see some of his teammates' Twitter on Sunday night, Monday and Tuesday as well, into Tuesday with Tyler Lockett, they're basically saying goodbye to him. That's what they've basically been doing the last couple of days. But the reaction, a lot of people were saying that, like, you have to start the grieving process, have to start the rehab process. The dude broke his fucking leg.
I know.
He's got to start his process. He's someone who's worked. I mean, how old is he? 29. So he's played the sport for 22 years. Worked for on this sport 7 days a week, 2 or 3 times a day when he's in high school and college, to get to this point where he is pretty much unquestioned the best player in his position at the league. Not just this season. Not just last season. For most of his career. I mean, Ed Reed retired 5 years ago, so he's probably been the unquestioned best player at his position for 5 years. He's been top three since he turned up. Well, he's been top three at his position since he turned up at Texas. He was drafted as a junior. He was 20 years old when we drafted him as a first round pick. He's done this for 22 years, and all of a sudden, it's kind of like. The last couple of years, obviously we saw it 2 years ago when he broke his leg, he's human all of a sudden. He's been on this track for 20 years. When he broke his leg, he was off the track and didn't know how to deal with it, and obviously did all this stuff on Twitter. And now it's happened again. It's hitting home, especially with how he seems disrespect with the money. But he's entering a contract year. It's not like he signed a new contract last year and now he's kicking up a fuss. He's entering a contract year and seeing people around the league who he knows or who he sees as below him getting paid money he thinks he should get, and he probably should have got, as I think we said, should have got it, but people are holding little minuscule events against him. It's Earl Thomas. This team is so worse off without him, and it's going to be so worse off because, as I said, there is no one like Earl Thomas in this league, and there's no one like Earl Thomas coming up. So for people talking about healing processes, that he should be more appreciative, I think that you saw humility as a word that was used. No. Like you said, you can't laud him at his best and then shun him at his worst, because that isn't his worst. That is someone who's worked for 20-odd years on his craft and to get to the point he's got to, and now there's a very good chance that he's not going to be able to get back to that point, and that's how he dealt with it.
Well, he's certainly not going to get compensated the way he should do. You can't imagine he's ever going to get a 4-year, $40 million contract, which, let's say, is what he's looking for. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
And, as a fan base, you can't really laud the Marshawn Lynch grabbing his balls, diving into the end zone in the same stadium, and then have a go at that, because that's what this team has been, and that's what we love them. That's why we love them.
Yeah, I mean, their anthem when they won the Super Bowl was a Rick Ross song, which is a word in I probably shouldn't say on a podcast. That's like they were against the grain. That's how, as you said, that's how they got to the point that they did for the last 4 or 5 years. And now all those people are pretty much gone. I mean, well, definitely the people who had that aura around them, they're all pretty much gone. And it's just, I just think the reaction to it is just bizarre. To some, I mean, you can't, just to completely shun him and say, I'm done with him and stuff like that. The dude is like, it's like facing his mortality almost, isn't he?
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. That was a fine rant.
Ultimately, it's
not the team's fault per se that he didn't get paid, it's not. You shouldn't be doing the, thank goodness they didn't pay him, because then they would have lost all this money. But it's just a sad situation. And the main criticism I do have with the team is that I feel they hang him out to dry a little bit based on the fact that they have clearly no intention, never had any intention of paying him. And don't give me the whole, you can see why, because this injury, because this injury is a freak injury that just happens and you can't account for it. And really, I was saying all summer that neither side here has any leverage whatsoever, and that's it's proven, because people saying, oh, the team got all the leverage in the world, but don't, because he's now going to walk away and we are going to get nothing, and we're going to end up losing Thomas, Sherman, Chancellor, Averill, Bennett, Richardson, Graham, and getting nothing in return. And when we had Rob Staten on last week, we were talking about, you know, how the rebuild, they've just not really dealt with it that well, and there's a strong chance now that it's going to go into next year. But with five picks and no one to trade that's worth any picks, you know, you're in trouble. And the team have really cocked this one up by not cashing in when they knew they were never going to pay him.
Yeah, and the only one they tried to cash in on was Michael Bennett, because that's the one they traded for, and they traded a fifth round pick, and the wide receiver is not even on the team anymore. Just the arguably the best ever secondary that the league has ever seen. The league has definitely seen for the last 20 odd years. Brandon Brown out, Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, and then obviously you put in Byron Maxwell. The team have absolutely nothing to show for it, apart from obviously the Super Bowl ring. But like, once they've gone, there's nothing coming up apart from, I don't know, people obviously say Shaquille Griffin, but there's just, yeah, it's just a wasteland, as you said. There's not a lot coming up the next couple of years either. But yeah,
it's just sad.
If it is the picture of him flipping the bird to the Seahawks sideline is the most fitting way for it to end, if you look at it from that way, because it is, as you say, it's how they made their name. It, like Richard Sherman made his name by the You Mad Bro stuff with the Tom Brady. No one really knew who Sherman was at that point. That position group especially made their name by being completely different, completely off center. But it's also why people took to him in Seattle, not just because they wore the color jersey.
I mean, maybe that LOB 30 for 30 is going to start with that picture of Earl Thomas on the stretcher.
And then it'll wind
all the way back to.
I mean, that's gonna be the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, it'll be amazing.
That's gonna be better than anything that Bill Simmons did on Andre or Ric Flair. That's gonna be unbelievable. Yeah, it's just quite sad. I mean, obviously, there is obviously a small glimmer of hope that he will stay, because there's one of 32 teams that he can sign for. But yeah, that's probably the last we're gonna see of Earl Thomas in a Seahawks jersey.
And we're going to lose. We're going to see the end of all three of the fulcrum of the LOB careers in Seattle end on that fucking field in Arizona.
Yeah. I mean, the name change didn't work, did it?
No, it did not.
One to praise on offense and defense.
One to praise on offense. Well, we'll probably go Mike Davis, because he was the game winner, really, ultimately. He ran hard, he ran well.
Yeah, I think defense.
Jaron Reed. I know you might go with Clark, but Jaron Reed is turning into a good run stuffer, but he's getting in the backfield more regularly, which is really exciting.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Justin Coleman. He lined up against honorable mentions Trey Flowers for that play on the David Johnson fumble. But he lined up against Fitzgerald more often than not on Sunday. Fitzgerald only had three catches for 28 yards. Only one of them went for a first down. He played really well. He had a couple of big pass breakups. He had a not so great PI early in the game, which set up the Cardinals' first touchdown, I think. But yeah, I thought against one of the best ever, I think he played really well. And he's what the team had hoped they'd be paying when they paid Jeremy Lane a few years ago. He is twice the player Jeremy Lane was. He's for what they give up, what they give up to get him. He could be someone who could get some of that Earl Thomas money in the off season.
I mean, he'll do well to get that much, but he.
I mean, like in that like general collective.
He'll be the kind of guy that we end up just losing because he wants $2 million more than is probably reasonable from our perspective. Although, you know, likely is it's going to be all change in the off season, so let's see what happens. But he's been an incredible asset and a rare one over the Patriots on a trade.
Yeah. Well, Cassie Smash is in San Francisco now, isn't he?
Yes, I think he is.
Yeah. So before we move on to the Cardinals game, Michael Kendricks has had his suspension come down from the NFL, an indefinite suspension for something that he might not face jail time for until January, but then Josh Brown got a one-game suspension for kicking the living daylights out of his girlfriend, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, the NFL obviously has weird ways of doing everything it does. What's your views on the whole Kendricks thing now, though? Because I kind of feel a bit grubby the fact that he sort of was brought in on a three-game loan system, effectively, and they're just waiting for him to go to jail. It doesn't really seem right, and it doesn't seem... I hate the word classy, so I'm not going to use it, but it doesn't seem that the way that an organisation should carry itself.
I have, and like, there's never going to be any way to prove this, I have a really nagging feeling that the team knew all along this is the week that he was going to get suspended. Because the team have signed... what's his name? Ty, the safety from... They signed the safety used to play for the Colts.
Yeah.
And they've also re-signed Maurice Alexander, who's probably going to take Kendricks' spot without KJ Wright. But also, with Kendricks, he couldn't have played in London because he can't leave the country because of his bail term. So he was never going to play more than, what, four games for the Seahawks. I have a really weird feeling that the team and the league have been in lockstep with this. I've got nothing to back it up apart from the fact that he was... The suspension come down. Maurice Alexander was released because he was injured. Mm-hmm. He's now had 5 weeks to get healthy. He clearly is healthy. And in that time, Michael Kendricks has popped in for a quick visit, and now he's gone back on the heap. There's just a... I don't know why. Just have a nagging feeling that there's...
I like it.
Yeah, there has been a bit of... I don't know. I've nothing to back me up. It's just a bit of a weird sense, because he was not making the trip to London, so we wouldn't have had him next week. It doesn't sound like we're going to have KJ Wright next week either. Yeah, that's what I think. I think there's been a bit of... Because it does happen. It does happen where the team, where the league is... The league's like, well, we're going to make a decision then, do what you want until then kind of thing.
I like it.
Yeah, it does happen. So the team have signed... What is that guy's name? The safety... There's a safety from the Colts. He played from last year. He was released in the summer. He's looks like he's going to be in a rotation back there with Tedrick Thompson. His first name's Ty. I want to say Jones, but I don't think it is. And then they did sign Maurice Alexander, who...
TJ Green.
TJ Green, not Ty. So it's two letters. TJ Green and Maurice Alexander. And also, Adam, Azeem Victor's, I think. I think he's still there. He's on the practice
squad.
He
is. That's really exciting.
One of your boys.
Yeah.
So that
I have to say, I expected, when he was going into his last year in college, I expected him to be a first or second round draft pick. I think we talked to Rob Staten about that 2 years ago, and now he's stashing a practice squad. But I mean, I always love watching him play, and nothing would give me more pleasure than if he was able to get called up to the big league at some point to play, because I think he could be, well, from his college tape, I thought it could be great. But then I thought that about JoJo Mathis, and he's on the scrap heap as well.
Yeah, I think he's in the Arena League now. Yeah, also, but at UW, him and Marcus Peters were the two people who fell most high profile to Chris Peterson's rule book, and obviously Marcus Peters has gone on to be one of the best players at his position in the league, and Victor's kind of not learned from that lesson he was Peterson tried to teach him. But yeah, before we move on to the Rams game, though, back on Earl Thomas briefly, this is what Pete Carroll had to say on Brock and Salk on Monday about their all-world safety and that flip of the middle finger.
I really think that, I know there's been a lot of talk about it. I think you got it. People that are criticizing whatever happened don't understand. This was an earth-shattering moment for a kid. You know, he's trying to play this game he loves, and all of a sudden this happens again. He knew exactly what had happened to him. He went right to what it's going to take to get back, and all the, he had it all just totally figured out, and it's as emotional as you can get. But he was very chilled about it, on the field. He was an unbelievable stud about handling it. So give him a little slack. This is a very, very difficult moment that most people would never understand what that was all about.
Yeah, so this Sunday, the Seahawks return home before their slog across the Atlantic early next week to London. The Rams roll into town like few teams have in recent NFL memory. 4-0. They have 35 points a game on offense, which is only second in the league, which kind of proves how much offense is winning away with this season, 2018 NFL season. They have 468 yards per game, which is the first, 343 passing yards a game, which is second in the league, and rush yards, 125 rush yards a game, which is only good enough for seventh. I mean, this team could have the 1,000-yard rusher and one thousand-yard receivers. Adam, where do we start with this?
I'll start by saying I see no way this is not going to be an unmitigated disaster. I would imagine, like last year, we'll end up falling behind and Schottenheimer is not going to have a clue how to get back into it. And we're going to get impatient and start throwing throwing needlessly aggressively versus just trying to keep the score down and not be overly aggressive. And I just think they'll score every time they get the ball. I think they could score any time they touch the ball. Bear in mind that you've got one linebacker really that you can hang your hat on, and you know Bradley McDougal and Shaquille Griffin are your two main secondary guys who, all due respect to the two of them, are not all pro level players yet, and you're talking about an offense that is maybe one of the most efficient the NFL's ever seen at this rate, and I just can't see how this isn't going to be a complete disaster. Sorry about that.
It's all right, though. It's hard to disagree. For comparison, the Seahawks wide receiver core have Tyler Lockett, which is 14.6 yards per reception. Brandon Marshall, 12.5 yards reception. Will Disley, who's not playing, obviously, so we'll scrap that. Jaron Brown, 11.3 yards per reception. And David Moore somehow has 19.5 yards reception on these two catches. The Rams have... four players with more than 15 catches four of them all have almost 13 yards reception. Brandon Cook, 17.4, Cooper Kupp, 14.5, Robert Woods, 13.5, and Todd Gurley at 12.9 yards reception. That's the best running back in the league, probably, at 12.9 yards per reception. Last week they did put more body in the shootout on Thursday Night Football against the Vikings. Jared Goff threw 5 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Yep, and they're going at 7.4 yards a clip on offense. There's just no stopping this lot on Sunday, really. Is that running game? Todd Gurley, 79 rushes, 338 yards, 4.3 yards a clip, so it's not. Mind-blowing numbers, but 4 touchdowns to go with his 2 through the air. He is, like I said, he probably is the top back in the league, isn't he? Him or Elliott?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, this kind of feels like we were playing against the 2013 Broncos at this rate, the way that they spread it around, they use the running back and whatever. But unfortunately, we do not have the 2013 Seahawks defense to come up against them. and that's my worry. Yeah. I mean, Gurley... The thing is, you can say, right, we're going to stop Gurley. Fine, stop him. That's fine. But then he can motion out as a receiver. And then what you're going to do then, they've got 3 other guys you can pass it to. Not sure if you heard Mike Leach, but he had a fantastically interesting quote this week, which I've never, ever thought I'd say. But he was saying that a balanced offense isn't 50% rushing, 50% passing. A balanced offense is having 5 playmakers that all 5 of them have an equal sort of impact on the game, and the worry with the Rams is that they've got 5 guys like that, and you know, if you do take one of them out, they'll just split that 20% across the other 4 guys and give it 25%, and that's what really worries me, that I don't know how we can possibly stop them all, and you end up with Robert Woods taking the piss
which he did 2 years ago when we were there for the Bills, and we had Tyra Taylor at quarterback. You had 140 yards on Monday Night Football. Brandon Cooks, 452 yards. I mean, this is the worst first game post Earl Thomas opponent to have, isn't it, in Brandon Cooks?
If you look at the statistics of us with and without Earl Thomas, it's incredibly uninspiring, to say the least. As you say, it's just the worst possible team to play against for this, because and also without KJ Wright, so you're trying to ask Bobby Wagner basically to control the entire back 7 and you know he's good but no one's that good.
Oh my god. Elsewhere for the Rams. Well, they have a new kicker. Cairo Santos is now their kicker. Greg Zuerlein's injured and they've had enough of Sam Ficken for some reasons. I don't really know why.
Must be so hard on his 45 points a game.
Yeah. The punter, Johnny Hecker, 7 punts, 48.4 yards. We have a better punter, with a better punt average, I guess. Probably should have looked at that before I said that. Let's go and have a check. We have exactly the same punt average. You can't even beat him on that. 48.4 for Hecker, who's only had 7 punts in 4 games.
We have 7 a game.
Come on. 7 punts in 4 games, Johnny Hecker. Michael Dixon's had 25.
Oh my goodness.
he's played against
worse teams than the Rams have.
Yeah, they played against possibly the best defense in the NFC North. They played against a good team in the AFC West. And who else they played?
The Raiders. Is that the good team?
No, the Chargers they played, didn't they?
And they waxed them.
And they absolutely destroyed and didn't let the Cardinals get into their half against the Cardinals.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, so at least they don't have Aqib Talib on Sunday, and according to my mate who's a Rams fan, Marcus Peters didn't look healthy on Sunday. But that defensive line, Adam, Donald Brockers, Sue, who else they got up there?
I mean, it's already enough. Let's be honest.
Yeah, there's a lot on that interior O-line we've just, about 10 minutes ago, I said, has looks set for the coming weeks. It's a big old test this Sunday because they've splashed the cash and chased the ring, and it looks like it's paid off for the first month at least. And Aaron Donald, after sitting out all of preseason training camp, looked like he's back to his best last week, which is perfect.
I'm just, oh God.
There is literally nowhere you can...
I kind of forgot that in addition to them also having the best offense, they also have Aaron Donald, who is Seahawk utter kryptonite.
Well, okay, I found a way where we've been better than them. The Seahawks, through 4 games, let me just back this up before I say it. Where is the stat? The Seahawks have 7 interceptions through 4 games. The Rams only have 4.
That is, yeah. I mean, him goffing it is the only way we can do this. You'd have to think. He'd just have to goff it right up.
I think Mike Dugar has been tweeting through. I think he's watched last season's that was bad. This could be worse. Car wreck of a game where the offense did nothing, and it could be the game where they decided to go ahead and chase the punter, Michael Dixon, because John Ryan was not very good in that game late on last season.
Well, Farrah Williams killed us. Farrah Cooper, sorry.
Farrah Williams is NARD, I think you're thinking.
No, that's Pharrell Williams.
I know. So it's a lot on the O-line and a lot on Russell Wilson staying upright and keeping the ball somewhere in the direction of our players, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the best way to get people like Lockett deep is by play action, but play action against Aaron Donald has been, well, A, don't do it, and B, play action against Aaron Donald is something that is probably gives Russell Wilson fits in the night, to be honest, because it's the kind of thing where he always gets eaten by the guy, and then you've got Ndamukong Suh, who can do it from the other side. So, oh my goodness.
This is ridiculous. The Rams have 39 more first downs than their opponents through 4 games.
There's normally a way that I can look at a game and see, right, if we do X, Y, and Z, we can win. You know, stop X, do Y, and execute Z, you can win. But in this instance, I just can't see it. I cannot see it.
They've only given up 8 sacks through 4 games.
There's just nothing. I can't see. You know, I don't know how I can send Skywalker in to destroy the Death Star here. I can't see on the plans how where the weak spot is, and that's my worry.
So join us next week where me and Adam eat a big pile of crow.
Yes.
This is going to be... We're going to hear the end of this next week. Especially when we can see everyone next week, so that'll be fun.
I do apologise, because no one wants to hear this on a Friday morning or Friday afternoon, wherever you're listening. But the Pedestrian Podcast is here to manage expectations. That's what we're here for you. And I think that's what we're going to have to do here, because I don't think it's going to be pretty. But we probably all knew that from the start of the season anyway, didn't we?
Well, yeah. At least my mate is a Rams fan in Florida this week, so at least I don't have to watch anything from him. Score prediction. If Seahawks win, the score prediction is it will be...
If we win, we will win 28-27.
Actual score prediction?
50-14.
if we win, it's going to be... If we win, it's going to be... This is going to be Browns Raiders.
Yeah.
This is going to be... No, this is going to be the Texans game last week, which I think was week four last week, wasn't it?
Last year, I think...
Week five last week.
Yeah, I think it was.
Week five or week six.
Yeah, first one after... Because yeah. We saw them against the Giants in week six.
Yeah.
And it was just after...
Week six or seven. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's almost the same time. But I think this is going to be 34-16.
Yeah, I'll go 44-14. I'll be a bit less ridiculous. I don't know how you get to 44. Five touchdowns, three field goals. Yeah, there you go.
Who's the one Seahawk you want to see? Who you're looking forward to watching on Sunday? Who you want to see stuff from?
Well, I'd be looking forward to watching Marshawn Lynch, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Michael Bennett, Cliff Avril, to be honest. You've had a choice. I guess you have to look forward to see how. Oh my God, Russell Wilson, because this is where he should be allowed to be told, this is your team, run it. Yeah. He won't be, but that's what should happen.
There is a slight, like the same as it was a slight feeling that the team in league set this up with Kendricks. There's a slight feeling that this is where we see it, kind of thing, or is that just
put all the crap on tape?
Yeah. I mean, it is possible. I mean, his rookie season, he didn't really start doing anything until like week 11.
I think, like Saluzzo in The Godfather, Brian Schottenheimer is just not that clever.
Oh, God. Enjoy the game on Sunday, wherever you watch it. I'm at work. Could be fortunate.
I'd much rather be at work.
If you're in London next week, and if we do win, we will take any finger pointing and where was you were saying all the rest of it. We will happily take that if the Seahawks escape Seattle with a win, which is just a ridiculous sentence. We're at home, for Pete's sake. Moving on. Obviously, after the Rams game on Sunday, whichever joys and delights that brings, it's time for possibly the biggest week this podcast is going to see, and also one of the more exciting weeks in this 2018 season, because this is happening.
Next month.
Touchdown, Seahawks!
When our Seattle Seahawks land in London.
London, baby!
The Pedestrian Podcast.
Welcome to another episode of The Pedestrian Podcast.
Coming live.
For the Seattle touchdown!
We welcome on a host.
Can we get serious now?
A very cool and very exciting guest.
It's your time. It's your turn.
From a central London location, we present The Pedestrian Podcast.
It's painful enough doing this as it is.
The London Shows.
London, baby!
Okay, because that's not going to get annoying.
Yep, so we are going to be live. We're going to be there. Probably not live because technology is not our friend. It's not very good with it. We're going to be there in London all week during the week. Loads of stuff is happening all through the week. A lot of cool things are coming from this podcast, but also from the penmanship of one Mr. Nathan, Adam.
Yeah, there'll be an article on the Seahawk website, all being well, over the weekend, just giving our visitors, whether you're from America or from, I don't know, well out of London, not see much of the city. A bit more of a locals guide to what you can get up to over the weekend, with some restaurant recommendations and spots to see and a couple of parks to walk through or whatever. So be sure to look that up, and you know, if you like it, let us know, because always good to know when this stuff goes down well.
I think it's going to go up. It might even go up by the time this podcast is out. So if you haven't yet gone on SeaHawks.com, it will be up there. As Adam said, some point over the weekend. A big thanks to John Boyle over at SeaHawks.com for reaching out and getting Adam to do some actual work this week.
I've only catered for 180 people in the last 6 days, but don't worry about me.
Might as well do some getting the bin.
Why not?
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
This week, Adam, I'm going to leave it up to you because I was in Arizona getting drunk in Patty's bar. So, Adam, get in the bin.
Well, I'm not sure if you saw, but the referees in the Oakland-Cleveland game deserved to get right in the bin. Not only did they stop Marshawn Lynch on a forward progress when it was like they've never seen the guy run before, because they stopped him and then half a second later he was through and about to score a touchdown, but they're given this decision against Cleveland, two decisions against Cleveland, one which was a spot, which seemed insane, but there's one which I'm not sure if you've seen it yet, but Derek Carr fumbled the ball and for some reason they gave forward progress, and it was completely and utterly bizarre. So those referees can get right in the bin. You must have someone that can get in the bin. You know, it's a very welcoming place, loads of space. You must have someone.
Hey, people in there, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, the timeshares are obviously well in place, as they always will be.
And they're Colin Cowards.
Yeah, they're Hall of Fame. They're Mount Rushmore in the bin.
I really can't think of anyone.
No
one's really annoyed me.
No one in Scottsdale do anything completely ridiculous that you thought you had to let the podcast know about?
No, not that I saw anyway. I think I'm going to put Nick Saban in the bin. Yeah, Nick Saban, the all-conquering, all-world, basically, they're just beating up everyone. They haven't scored a touchdown in the fourth quarter, and their point differential is still something like 140 or something ridiculous. They do everything in the first half, and he's complained this week that he's not very happy with the attendances at Alabama home games. We'll play proper teams, and you can't have it both ways. You can't put out a team which is so much more physically and everything better than your opponents, because you are playing not the greatest teams. I mean, you played Louisiana, Lafayette, Raging Cajuns on Saturday. You can't expect people to turn up and watch that. The Huskies sold out against BYU and possibly put in the most impressive defensive performance, especially, and that sold out. But you can't build a team like you are and do things to teams like you have through the first month of the college season and then expect people to still pay stupid money to pay your extortionate wage when you play an absolute dross, Adam.
Very true. And actually, Jimbo Fisher can get in the bin for grabbing one of his players' face masks, which when you earn $75 million, you do not have the right to do that to a kid who's earning your money for you. So that's well reminded. And I have just thought of one other set that can go in the bin, and that's the Los Angeles Rams, because we're coming for you. Yeah. We don't like you, whether we might lose or not. You are a bunch of slags, and we're after you this weekend. And now I believe, turn it round, we're going to win.
There's plenty of whiskey was consumed during the making of this podcast. Yeah, obviously, as I say, college, the Huskies, Adam, that defense, it turns out, is the new DBU in college football. That was really impressive. Anything else? Did you not have a chance to watch any college ball this week?
Didn't have a chance because I was actually working very hard all weekend, Stuart. I didn't have a chance to watch much college ball, I'm afraid.
No, I did while I was talking to Lawyer Malloy, not to name drop, but...
Yeah. Very good. Well done.
Yeah, if you do manage to watch any college ball this week. It might be someone we're going to do a drafted Seahawks on if I can find the bit of production I did last year for this. If you watch Jakai Polite, I think that's how you say his name, Florida defensive end, keep that name in mind when the Seahawks come round on the clock next year in the draft, if they do ever pick again in the first. Enjoy the game wherever you watch it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can on Facebook, UK Seattle Seahawks fans. Twitter at Seahawkers UK. Personal ones is at Stuart_Court and at Adam D. Nathan. Instagram is at UK Seahawkers. As I said, enjoy the game. Enjoy next week, no matter where you watch or what day you roll in to old London town. It's going to be quite a week, just as soon as we forget what is probably going to happen on Sunday. Yeah, this has been the
Go Hawks!
Ladies and gentlemen, this man next to me to my left is a Hall of Fame player. I know he don't want to hear it. He's never going to allow anybody to take his focus away from what he's doing right now, but this man is a Hall of Fame player. And if you don't realize that, then what the hell are you watching?